Ood of the Galaxy, unite. You have nothing to lose but your brains. Welcome to A Podcast of Impossible Things. With me, Swithin Dobson.
Me, Caleb Woodsbridge.
Me, James Willetts.
And me, Peter Bell.
And tonight we'll be discussing the latest episode of Doctor Who. What's it called?
Planet of the Ood.
Planet of the Ood, that's the one.
In which there's a planet with some Ood.
Well done, Caleb. Just to start off, what did everyone think about it? It's just in general. Peter?
I was pleasantly surprised, actually. It had an awful lot of the old classic series feel to it, I think, which is the second week running. I think it's had touches of the old series. But fabulously realised alien planet, some good supporting cast. Again, I have some issues with the depth of the plot and the logic of the resolution. But I have a feeling that this is going to become a habit.
Burning theme.
Yes. But for all of that, I enjoyed it.
James?
Yes, I also really enjoyed it. Again, slightly heavy metaphors aside, I think that it worked really well. I think that it was nice to see a slightly different planet, and I think that the chemistry between Catherine Tate and David Tennant is really growing, so I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I thought that it was a good episode. I thought it was their best attempt to portray a genuinely alien race yet with the Ood and showing more of them. I felt it did perhaps not quite take things with as it was a bit simplistic, a bit overly black and white in some respects, which dragged it down slightly, but still a very entertaining episode.
My opinion was it was pretty lightweight, I think we probably all agree. Reasonably stylish, I didn't think there was much there. Nicely put together some reasonable elements, but I didn't really buy it much, really.
Highlights and lowlights of the episode for you?
Highlights. We have a claw. which reminded me of Toy Story. Okay. The lowlights, I think we'll get there.
Right.
If no one else has anything else to start to begin with, I think we'll get the tape rolling.
Sure.
Yeah. And we'll begin.
Let's get this underway.
Let's not be disappointed at watching manners. All it takes is a please or a thank you.
I do like this pre-title sequence, the lights coming on, quite stylish.
Yes, it's an unusual opening, I suppose, for Doctor Who. It doesn't follow the convention of person running away from monster, person dies.
True. It does introduce the concept of Ood being a commodity very well, as like a pre-opening sequence, which works quite well, really.
Is there any kind of fixed exchange rate of a credit to a pound? How much is that really worth? 50 credits?
Absolutely no idea.
Okay.
Well, you had some people trying to work out the sums for the conversion based on Voyage of the Damned, because Mr. Copper was able to convert his galactic credits into pounds at the end. But the maths don't seem to... Ooh. And the Ood offs
the translation.
A nasty businessman.
Yes, because we're all nasty, obviously.
Yeah, businessmen are by definition evil in the Doctor Who universe, of course.
It wouldn't be anything different, really, could it?
And scientists, unless they're misguided.
Yes.
In which case, they're still going to die, but, you know.
But they get a heroic moment before the end. The two categories of scientists.
Opening title sequence. Any thoughts on the music growing on you?
It's week by week. It's annoying me less.
Annoying me less.
some nice use of the old "we're shaking around" to make it look like the TARDIS is moving.
Yes. Wobbly cat. Although, as from what I can gather, they're both falling in the wrong direction as the camera tilts from one side to another.
In best Doctor Who tradition.
That's perfectly choreographed in the opposite direction.
Did someone want to talk about David Tennant's quiff at some point?
Oh, yeah, that's quite impressive.
Yes. This was a point I raised earlier on. It hasn't been noticeable in the previous two episodes, but David Tennant's quiff this week is a thing to behold.
It's almost an alien species of its own.
It deserves a spin-off series.
That's what Tennant refers to.
That's it.
David Tennant, his alleged nickname.
Is it possible that's what's going to end up on her back?
I thought you were going to make some merchandise out of it. Buy David Tennant's quiff for Christmas.
quite how David Tennant gets
nice matchup.
Here we go. We've got the nice realisation of the first alien planet of the season.
Yes.
And an ice planet, which is nice because normally they're just fire planets.
Or a quarry.
A planet that looks strangely like Cardiff Bay.
Strange, that, isn't it?
It's amazing how many of those there really are.
Do you think the Doctor wanted to go skiing and got lost?
Yeah. But it should be pointed out that this is actually filmed in the most traditional of Doctor Who locations, a quarry somewhere.
I like the little humour of his him making his little speech and she's got gone back in.
Yes.
It's quite nice. His expression to the sort of wonky...
She's wearing fur here, you know. Killing animals, fine.
Oh,
it's Thunderbird 3.
Yeah.
It's not Thunderbird 1, isn't it?
No, it's Thunderbird 3. Thunderbird 3. Thunderbird 1 had the red cap, but the
although it's flying, interestingly enough, like Thunderbird 1, because a rocket is aerodynamically incapable of actually hovering horizontally.
Maybe it's
and it's landed 42nd century. Who knows what they can do.
This is true enough.
Obviously nothing got good hair.
And again, here we have the introduction of a businessman who is thoroughly, thoroughly evil and doesn't like anything other than the bottom line.
And his hair.
Nothing is more important than
if only he'd bought a wig, none of this might ever have happened.
True. Now, this woman, whose name escapes me for now, something Barker... I wish I could remember what it was. Was Queen Amidala's replacement in Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
That's right.
Practically unrecognisable underneath a ton of geisha makeup. But And I've been trying to remember if there are any other Star Wars actors and actresses who've made an appearance in Doctor Who at any point in
Well, David Prowse.
David Prowse, obviously, yes. In the Time Monster.
Julian Glover.
Oh, indeed. Well. Yes.
Peter Cushing.
But he's not canon, does he? But yes, okay, we have to say.
Peter Cushing's cool. Of course he, not quite counts in a canon sense of it.
Yeah, and just on the other side of that ridge is the Battle of Hoth.
That's true.
Yeah, it's funny how most planets will have only one ecosystem.
Yes.
So it'll be a jungle planet.
There is clearly some grass and some soil underneath the snow in these shots. And a reference is made a little later when the buyers and the delegates first arrive at the Oud processing plant that the weather has turned cold. So it's implied that the weather isn't like this necessarily all year round. But it does raise another interesting question. If this is the planet of the Oud, where do the Oud actually live? They aren't all born at the factory, surely.
Apparently they are.
Yeah. And apparently they're all male.
They all wear exactly the same clothes.
Well, they obviously shop at the same place that the Daleks got the boiler suits for.
I think they shop at Primark. Men.
Yeah, yes, that's it. The Weevils from Torchwood.
Maybe they make the clothes.
The Primark.
Well, the Weevils in Torchwood were all actually apparently given their boiler suits by Torchwood when they captured them. So maybe they just, have a range of Oud clothing that they give to them.
There's an entire other underground base that we have yet to see that's just full of little women at sewing machines.
Yeah. But also, they're all the same age and height and weight.
And presumably, they also do all the Torchwood branding.
Yes.
They come up with lots of stickers with the Torchwood logo so they can put it on absolutely everything.
That's true.
Just this point, I thought the music was particularly good at this point with the Death of the Ood. I thought it was one of Murray Gold's best so far with the use of the strings. Right. I was wondering what everybody's general opinion is of the music this season so far and where it can go and where it should go.
I must admit that the music didn't stand out for me in this episode, but that's usually a good sign. If you don't necessarily remember the incidental music, it's probably done its job fairly well. Although, having said that, last week's episode, Fires of Pompeii, I thought all of the choral pieces that went with the music were particularly well done. Listening to it again now, I think you're right, this is good stuff.
Yeah, I think particularly the death music and the song comes at later, which is pretty good as well. It works very well. Although I would like them to try a bit more experimental stuff.
Yeah, apparently the Russell T Davies specified at the start he didn't want the very traditionally sci-fi sounding electronica like classic Doctor Who. He wanted to move away from that.
If the Ood are psychic, could they not see through the psychic paper?
The Ood, very good question. Technically they could, couldn't they?
Possibly, or they might be more susceptible to it.
You don't know.
Although, if we remember that the Torchwood employees in Series 2 had basic psychic training.
Yes.
Yeah.
And could see through the psychic paper.
Well, yeah.
The first of many alarms going off.
It's handled very well in the PR fashion.
Yes. Ah, now here we have evil corporate soldiers, Covent Guards. And Swithin, I think, pointed out an interesting feature of the... I'm not sure if he's a sergeant or captain of the guards' weapon, so to speak.
Did I?
You did, but I will tell the viewers, or listeners.
You don't remember?
Yes, well, we have... He is effectively the alpha male. We were questioning why any corporation worth its salt would employ such an obvious head case as their chief of security.
Here it comes.
And in fitting with his position, he has the biggest gun of anyone in this episode. But not only that, it appears to have two spherical protuberances at the base of the barrel. So no readily apparent reason other than to emphasise a Freudian point. And he does like waving it around a lot, it has to be said.
Oh dear.
That's a nice green glowing watch there that he's speaking into. I'm sure that we'll be seeing one of those next Christmas.
Yes, hopefully it'll be a classier product than the replica fob watch that we've been given this year.
Nice plastic creation.
Do we know if there's any particular reason why his personal Ood has been given a name? Ood Sigma, with a special emblem on his tunic.
We're not told. Thank you. Or perhaps after a stressful day, a little something. I was trying to figure out some significance for it, but I couldn't.
Which is really creepy.
Yes. With a sexy female voice. An episode of Torchwood would have been amazing.
It's so true.
Yeah, we fulfilled our weekly quota of Torchwood bashing.
It is interesting in showing the commodification, the sort of whole consumerist thing around.
Sensor Ice reference there.
Yeah, classic series.
The Sensor Sphere.
Which is from which year, Swithin?
The Sensor Ice was the first season, so that would be 64.
Oh, right, okay.
Going
quite a way back. So, two William Hartnell references in as many weeks now. Yeah. There was the reference to the Romans in last week's episode.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So,
yeah, very much so.
Thank you.
Different references in there. Ooh, what do we think this Russell's, the writer, Temple, Keith Temple, thinks of global warming then? You know, we've all survived. So, ooh.
Well, yes. Although, it put me in mind of the Doctor's speech to Rose back in Series 1, Episode 2, The End of the World, where they're first looking out over the Earth, and he's saying something, almost exactly the same speech in many ways, saying that well, you humans think you're going to be killed off by beef or global warming or E. coli or bird flu. I can't remember what the exact words were. It's the same sentiment that
we never stop to imagine if you survive.
Indeed.
Except the bees cause a problem, obviously.
Yeah, it's interesting that the bees are hitting the headlines in real life right now.
Yeah.
Just as this goes out.
Yeah. Have any of you seen a clip of the giant bee?
The giant
bee? Oh, giant bee. Apparently it's been the chase of the series.
The unicorn and the wasp.
The Vespi form.
Ah, okay. The giant.
Yeah. Okay, so that's unconnected then. It's not just the bee that they're turning giant and...
No, and travelling back in time to stalk
Agatha Christie.
Oh, here we have the businessman being evil again, because that's what he's good at.
Yes. Although he's very good, I must admit, the actor really does seem to be enjoying this.
He's in Spooks, isn't he?
He may well be. He was Darling in Blackadder.
He's in Notting Hill as well?
Yes, as the failed restaurant owner, I think.
I'm worried that people know this.
Ah.
It's a very good thing. Very nice.
That's great, nasty. This scene.
Oh, nice gunshots.
A little more brutal than the new series of Doctor Who generally plays things, though. Right?
I think
subtle as it was, it was.
I think it's interesting that Russell T Davies has often talked about the show being very optimistic, especially in its view of humanity. But you do get something of the. Darker side here, which I think isn't done terribly subtly, but it is good to address that, because the Doctor can be, oh, humans, I love humans, I do, oh wonderful.
Especially the young blonde pretty one.
What's also interesting is that apparently this snow sticks to the bottom of surfaces as well as the top.
Wow.
Well, perhaps there's
it's alien snow.
It's good snow.
Blizzards.
Very nice bit with the factory with the big rotating cylinder things. We don't know what it is.
Obviously filmed in some industrial facility somewhere in South Wales.
Yeah, I think
are there any
Port Talbot.
Port Talbot.
I think I heard.
Fabulously done, though. It was real... Nice. And it has to be said, I think we're so used to whenever alien planets or environments feature in Doctor Who, to the characters having one big grandstanding overview of a CGI city or landscape, and then being inside for most of the rest of the episode. There are an awful lot of exterior scenes here, and even though they're obviously filmed in a real facility in Earth, it's so large and unusual and nicely shot that you do get a sense of scale and being outdoors.
Yeah.
Here you've got the new series staple of staring down at a balcony at some CGI thing.
Yes, and a glowing red.
Just point on perspective, I thought it was a great idea at the start. Obviously, it's an alien planet, so you want to get a feel for it, so you have the long shots of it. It was completely different to the Fires of Pompeii, in which we didn't get very much of that, especially at the beginning, so we didn't get the scope of how it was happening.
Yes,
in this Graham Harper, to his credit, we've got a much more diverse, kind of bigger kind of entity to work within.
Because I felt it was just a pity having gone all the way to the Trinity to studios, you didn't get a few shots that gave more of a sense of scale early on, because they were very nice alleyways, but if you just got a couple of establishing shots of the city for whole, there were, I suppose they were pretty good, but it just wasn't quite.
Good point.
How does the brain roar exactly?
Well, it might not roar later on when it's actually revealed as a brain, but for dramatic purposes.
Maybe it had lots of raw brain power. Couldn't resist it. Some exterior shots here.
But we were talking, it's been mentioned already that the businessmen are portrayed a little stereotypically as evil money-grabbing bastards, basically. And big business as a whole is portrayed in a very negative light.
Yeah.
This is something of a long-running Doctor Who staple, though, isn't it? Going as far back, in particular, industry as well is generally shown as being fairly evil. Well, not evil, but certainly amoral.
I'm trying to think of a good portrayal of it.
Mm. Well, I guess Invasion of the Dinosaurs shows the Doctor helping save the world from misguided utopianists who want to return Earth to a sort of pre-industrial golden age.
Because most of the time it's
Green Death style. You've got
It's always evil, and it's like if you. Interestingly, when you have the second bountiful Earth Empire, which is portrayed in the Frontier in Space,
right?
You have lots of reference to the Earth is basically just a big smoking smog, basically, because we're all factories. Which is an old. But yeah, it is an old staple. Mm. Although I do think the characterization of the business has been better. Best example of this being Kevin Stoney's portrayal of Tobias Vaughan in The Invasion.
Right.
Who has a lot more to him than the guy in here, I can't remember his name. But it certainly is a long-running staple.
Mm. You see, the only reason I mention it is because all of these wonderful outdoor shots of the factory facilities and all the smoke and chimneys really put me in mind of Inferno, the John Hurley story, running around on the gasworks and the nuclear facilities there. I'm just thinking it's a very similar portrayal of industry and misguided business practices.
Oh,
the claw!
It moves! The claw is our master. He decides who will go and who will stay.
This is the debut of the big action scene with the claw, which I think is fantastically well done, and hats off again to the mill for some superlative CGI.
Just somewhat gratuitously inserted into the plot. It is good, it's just bit unnecessary.
It serves no function whatsoever.
Except
to see
some hideous overacting from the head heavy, which is going to come up in a minute or two.
Why have they thrown Donna in the cage with the youth? Why not just, take her back to him?
Hmm. They don't seem to be equipped with handcuffs or anything, really, do they?
Head heavy getting his fix for the day.
Yes.
Because obviously that's what he likes doing.
You do get the impression they hired him straight from prison.
Oh dear. That was terrible. That truly was terrible. Parts of the web pilot were more plausible than that. I mean, the web pilot, but this is another level.
This is very well done technically.
Oh yeah, but it serves absolutely no purpose whatsoever.
It's exciting.
Yes, again, it's style over substance. Which seems to be an ongoing theme. Particularly.
He's very good with that claw.
I have the impression this isn't the first time he's done this.
There's probably lots of friend of Ood there to chase around with a nice big claw. This is fun.
It's like those things in amusement arcades trying to grab the toy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here we have the unnecessarily slow moving Ood as they gradually creep towards Donna.
Oh, Doctor Who monsters always seem to slow to a crawl as the plot demands it.
Well, it's true. As Colin Baker said, the easiest way to get rid of away of a monster was just move, because it was so darn slow.
At least she's trapped in there.
Yes, that's true. With
it is quite a nice, scary Doctor Who staple, trapped in with a monster.
But doesn't build to any particular
climax
tension here.
Yeah,
no. as soon as the claw is stopped, it's as though they forget about Donna until they
But the claws are starting to show.
They've spread up again now, though, so that's all right.
Yeah.
These ones have managed to open a crate from the inside.
Obviously.
True.
And that wee Indian girl is running incredibly fast in some incredibly tall heels.
Yes, I don't... Never worn heels myself, but I think that'd be rather difficult.
Especially on snow.
Indeed.
Now, you guys are probably sick of me saying this, but I would just like to voice my appreciation for the absolute cuteness of this week's guest, Totty.
Although, she's now going to get it.
Yes, yes. It's her fate is sealed, really, isn't it?
Well, it is in just a moment. Wait for it. You've got the precise moment coming up when she is doomed. The Doctor appeals to her better nature.
Yes.
And obviously she doesn't have one because she works for a corporation.
I do think it's quite a nice moment because you do get a sense she's a bit torn. But now she's doomed because she's called the guards.
But again, it is playing against the... Saturday tea time drama convention of having the morally ambiguous character swayed by the hero and who comes through at the last minute to help them and realises the error of her ways.
Ooh, did she not get it then?
A quick question for everybody. This is one of the first occasions on which we have a returning new series monster. The only other occasion I can think of being the Slitheen.
Yes.
So what does everyone think about the choice of the...
About 2,000 or three of them. I think it does a good job of expanding on their previous appearance in the Satan Pit.
I prefer them to the Slitheen. that's not particularly surprising.
You prefer the Murka to the Slitheen, don't
well,
you?
Well, yes, I mean, that green paint would have looked good on the Slitheen.
Mr. Blobby, I think, is... Mr. Blobby is basically a pink Slitheen.
It is true, Mr. Blobby doesn't fart.
The Slitheen are quite good, they've got some personality.
Yeah.
They look incredibly cool.
Yes, that is quite cool.
The cat people, they were a returning thing, were they from...
Good point.
Not monsters.
Well, but then the alien species, really monsters in the strictest
sense.
Well, they function as monsters for a lot of the story.
That's true.
Here's a nice talk.
Can you say Christmas special robot? Santa Claus thing?
Oh, playing cooking. Oh, no, playing.
Tidings of.
No, what else is it called? God Bless You, Merry Gentlemen, Twike. And they played that the same song the year before as well.
Did they?
I think so. Yeah. Right. Well, but here we get the nice moralist bits coming here.
Yeah.
Because you.
These are this Donna and the Doctor have uncovered a cell filled with unprocessed Ood who appear to be acting differently.
Yes, and why they're there, we know not.
It's interesting the Doctor can seemingly impart telepathic abilities or awaken them.
He's a Vulcan. Yes.
Well, there's precedence for that. He's done similar things back in The Terror of Zygons and also in Frontier in Space Again.
Ah, okay. So there is a classic series precedent to the new series.
Yes. But certainly in the Frontier in Space.
This music's very good.
Yes. Some of Murray Gold's best. With a single sort of soloist rather than his big choir, which he normally gets out.
And a very strong moment for Catherine Tate.
And it's nice that this is the second week that she's tried to shoulder some of the burden that the Doctor bears alone, and this week she hasn't actually managed it. She's had to give back the song.
Yes, that's right.
Come on, what's the hold-up? The experimentation will have maximum security. It's fused the system. We don't just stand there, get the ball covers, rip that door off.
Simon, go back to the reps.
as we're onto it now, obviously the whole slavery thing.
Yes, we can't really talk about this episode without raising the slavery issue. It's a big, unsubtle moral mallet that the series is hitting.
What was he actually saying apart from slavery is bad?
That's about it. Slavery is bad. Don't buy slaves, kids. If you want something to buy, we've got lots of nice produce. Doctor Who themed goods, but not slaves.
Yes.
And here we find out what they originally have instead of
a brief aside from
their translation personal ball.
Yes, from the slavery issue.
The brain issue.
It's the meatball.
The most stupid idea in history.
How did it evolve? I mean, on one level, it's quite a nice idea because it's very alien and different, and it makes some kind of sense. But when you stop to think about, well, how would that actually work? There must be no predators at all.
How do they get dressed if they've got a brain in their hand?
And couldn't the company have just designed a pocket for them to put the brain in?
Well, see, it would work better if it had been like a mace. If they made like a solid object thing, using casings that you could use as a weapon. You know, yes. And that'd be fun. Put a couple of spikes on the end, hit people, fine. You know, that'd have made a lot more sense.
And then you could have stolen the line from Firefly: "I can kill you with my brain."
A nice bit there where the Doctor's plan.
Here we go.
Yes.
No, that is the stupidest line ever. Why having a brain on the outside makes you peaceful?
We're men, we have our genitalia on the outside. It does not make us peaceful.
That's just silly. Sorry, I get wound up about that. but back to the slavery.
And now we've got some Holocaust parallels with them.
Yes. It's
playing it on.
It's rapidly becoming a case of Ood, peaceful, rather timid, and naive, it has to be said, species who mean nobody any harm, and humans who are the evil, money-grubbing bad guys who are only after themselves.
It does also completely remove the rather interesting moral ambiguity of the idea of a race that wants to serve.
Yes, that's true.
Which is quite an interesting question, though. If they did genuinely want to serve, would that justify it? Is that legitimate? And that raises some interesting questions. But now it's completely black and white.
Yes.
It just skips over any potentially interesting issue completely.
Yeah, because I just feel that if you're doing drama, to properly show, basically you're cheating if you don't show the opposing view as well as you can, basically. Because, I mean, the great thing about Shakespeare is that it's very hard to tell what his agenda is, because he makes all the voices so eloquent. Mm. And obviously you don't want it to be an apology for slavery.
No.
But if you at least... it's just to make it convincing as a way of... saying that slavery is evil. For that to be convincing, you need to actually show the slavers with some degree of humanity to be believable, for it not to be a sort of straw man argument, as it were.
True. Which appears to be precisely what this episode is setting up. They are all big cardboard cutouts moral arguments thrown at them.
Yeah.
And you've got the whole poetic justice here of all the nasty people getting their thoroughly deserved comeuppance in best Doctor Who tradition.
Although there was a certain satisfaction in watching the psycho chief of the guards get gassed by his own canisters. It has to be said.
It is well done.
That's quite funny.
At this point, for those of you not watching the episode along with the commentary, the Ood have risen up and gone on their scary red-eyed rampage and are massacring people left, right and centre.
And the Doctor doesn't seem to care.
Yes, there's no voice raised against the Ood killing people. Whereas the evil black uniformed humans are still very much in the wrong.
Yeah.
And if I were him, if every other Ood on the planet had gone crazy and was killing people, I wouldn't have my servant at my side by this point. I would have locked him safely in a cupboard.
You do perhaps get a hint of something more to the character, some kind of sense of loyalty or under there, however deeply buried, with that just little exchange. So, some slight,
the moment at which he sends the Ood Sigma off to join his people. Although that seems to be almost inviting him to join in the violence, really, wasn't it? you were loyal to the last. Go join your people in the massacre of mine. The Ood still moving.
Very slowly.
Very, very slowly.
A wholly ineffective weaponry, apparently.
Yeah, what is actually the translator? Why does it actually discharge lots of voltage?
I think it is the secondary function, you know.
It's just not explained. They're all raising hands. It's all nations or something.
It's all quite evangelical in its... charismatic, I should say, in its in its imagery.
Friends. Yes, they're friends, and they do absolutely nothing for the whole episode. It's fantastic. Into someone's face, which is quite funny.
Surely Nooch could only theoretically suck somebody to death for it.
Well, we don't know what exactly is under the tentacles.
No, we didn't get to see the post-mortem, unfortunately. But
maybe he stuck the brain down that guy's throat. He just choked him to death.
But back onto the just another comment on the slavery thing. He did mention the line, you know, we don't. Donna saying, "Oh, we don't have slavery on Earth anymore," and he says, "Where do you get your clothes from?" The kind of sweatshops argument, which they just completely avoided and got rid of. And also the fact there's still lots of slavery on now, proper kind of, not even sweatshops, it's like you are a slave, not touched at all.
Yes, because there's more slaves in the world now than when the slave trade was abolished
William
Wilberforce's, mostly to do with the sex trade.
Yes, and the question wasn't raised last week in Pompeii, in which there would have been thousands of slaves. In fact, the family that the Doctor saves at the end kept servants, certainly, but we can only assume they would have been slaves.
Slaves of some description, and that wasn't kind of tackled at all. It just seems any good meat the story could have, well, obviously the characters could be quite a lot better as well, but all the meat kind of, it just disappeared. It's like, I don't know, it's like a good-looking sandwich which doesn't really have anything there. It feels nice at the time, then you realise you want to have... It's like having McDonald's. You eat it, and then 10 minutes later you're hungry.
Yes.
Yeah, because I really enjoyed it at the time, but...
Unless everyone ignores the slavery issue of McDonald's too, so...
But as a thinking about this episode and stuff to say about it, just realising how little it actually... substance there was in terms of content beyond saying slavery is bad. Well, duh. I was rather less impressed with it. I mean, it is Saturday tea time entertainment, but I think there's room for...
If you're going to raise the argument, you have to treat it properly. Especially, as I say, coming hot on the heels of the fires of Pompeii, in which slavery could have been touched upon briefly. It wouldn't have had to be a major theme running through the story.
You could have seen the slaves talk.
Yes.
It could have foreshadowed this episode nicely.
Exactly. You could have just knit the 2 weeks together, entirely different circumstances, but two perhaps different sides of the argument and the same issue.
But I do think the show present seemingly is going style by what Susan said before, because rewatching the last two episodes, they look quite good on the surface first time round. Rewatching them,
yes,
the rewatchability value is practically zero.
I must admit, rewatching this now, I'm a lot less impressed than the first time I saw it. A man has just been eaten by a giant brain, we should point out.
The brain doesn't seem to have a mouth, but...
No,
can somehow roar as well from earlier in
that. Yes.
Oh, and of a great superfluous line from Catherine Tate there, you murdered him. You don't say, Catherine, you're very observant.
She may as well have said, you're a bad guy.
You're
an evil businessman, who cares about obviously, nobody but yourself.
He's got black leather gloves on.
Always a bad son.
Maybe he's an incarnation of the Master, but a really bad one at that.
Although kudos to the actor for this scene, as he's holding him at gunpoint and something is clearly wrong with him. Very well acted, I thought. We now discover why he's been drinking his hair tonic all the way through the episode.
I think he's got something he has tonic water. Keith Sample. Maybe his mother drank too many G&Ts when he was a child. He has bad memories.
Now, this upcoming scene has raised some contention among fans, or rather parents of young fans, for being a little too graphic.
It is possibly the most graphic scene of certainly the last 3 years.
I think you're...
Even more so than The Empty Child, when you've got the recutting in with the sound effects.
Yes.
This beats it.
Indeed it does.
By a long way.
You see... awful. It's not simply a morph, it's an actual peeling away of this man's face to reveal something underneath.
And he's realising...
I thought this was coming.
I know.
I did find this not terribly surprising.
But, no, but it's surprising in the execution, I think.
It's a good moment. I mean,
we've got peeling opening the head, roundabout, now.
You see the inside of his skin.
This is the best bit. The
alternative version of this shot, which I showed on Confidential, from the front, with the flaps of skin flapping about, is far worse.
I missed that. We'll have to reshoot that. Another entirely superfluous line in Catherine's face.
And
character traits.
He's about to gob up his brain. There it is.
Oh, there we go.
Fantastic finish.
So the brain starts out inside their head.
And again, the very strong sense of poetic justice, which interestingly works in this story and in most Doctor Who stories, but in Voyage of the Damned was very deliberately subverted. The good characters on the whole died, and it was the most unpleasant character, one of the most unpleasant passengers who actually survived, making a very strong point that the Doctor can't save everyone, and that sometimes it's not the deserving who live and the undeserving who die.
One of the few merits of Voyage of the Damned, I felt.
Oh, nice music yet again.
No. Could somebody point out to me, because I missed it the first time round, and I think I talked through it here, what exactly is the difference between the processed ood with the translator balls and the unprocessed ood with the brains? Come the end,
apparently there is none. Also, why have these evil soldiers stopped fighting at this point? All our enemies are singing, but instead of shooting them...
We'll join the hands and
I think the unprocessed dude are being controlled telepathically by... The processed dude are being controlled to perfectly by the unprocessed ones.
So they are slaves to the unprocessed.
But it's interesting here. I don't know whether it seems that
Sigma seems to become their unofficial leader.
What's that? The Doctor's song must end. But before it ends, he's obviously going to become a legend on the Planet of the Ood for doing absolutely nothing.
It's good music.
It is. Some rather unsubtle plugging of things to come later in the series. But yes, as Caleb points out, followed by the Bad Wolf theme, so presumably tying into Rose as opposed to...
Or the Telling Bird. It's a different piece of music from Rose's music.
We know the Doctor is in, David Tennant is playing the Doctor in next year's specials, so it's not a regeneration.
Or maybe it's foreshadowing a regeneration at the end of the specials.
Possible.
Which is...
Now, next week's trailer...
It's Martha. I'm bringing you back to Earth. Terribly delivered line.
A terrible line and terribly delivered. Now, here is the Unified Intelligence Task Force.
Ooh. Yes, I'm tired.
What you did,
turned into a
soldier. Sontarans. I'm sure all football fans out there, Sontarans look just like Abraham Grant.
Into the face of death. Yeah. Nice bit of Doctor Who monster melodrama.
Yes.
I'm talking over the music. Oh well, it's the new version of the music, so go ahead.
It doesn't matter that much. I'm not confident about the Sontaran two-parter on the strength of that trailer.
I don't know, I like the trailer, but mainly because I like all the soldiery military stuff rather than, you know, the Marthery lameness.
I like
What's Martha. The betting that he's going to start crying now that Martha's back again?
What? Because she's returned?
Yeah.
It's very
interesting that for the majority of season 3, he spent every episode in tears. And since Martha's left, he hasn't once cried.
Well, he didn't cry in any of the first 3 episodes of series 3.
Okay, so it's obviously after that point that he got a bit wimpy.
But let's see.
And for 2 of those episodes, he was technically human. So
yeah, human nature's the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
The one where he was 42. He cried because he was so afraid.
Oh, yeah.
I have real problems with the fact that they made him cry quite so much.
I feel that it was quite nice. I think it was one of the few interesting things about 42 was that it showed the Doctor being genuinely scared.
I disliked it because I don't think that he would be scared. I thought it was nice that he cried over the Master.
Oh, yeah.
But that was the only time that I really felt it was relevant. But, yeah, Martha's returning... Whoop-de-doo.
Just a question. What do you think of the resolution I get of the story? Because it seems
of Planet of the Ood.
Yeah, we have the Ood being emancipated and they're joyous and they sing their song again. And for some, everything's going to be fine, obviously, because you know the whole of the Earth's Empire is going to collapse under the weight of no more slaves, obviously. So those could collapse completely.
Well, we don't know that. I think it would have been quite nice if they'd implied something like that, if they'd shown that there was going to be a cost to this, to the humans.
There are going to be repercussions of some sort.
Yeah, although, to be fair, it seems that the company did lie about the true nature of the Ooze, telling people that they were just these willing servants, and so... The Empire as a whole, it seems, wasn't necessarily aware of it, although considering there's the Friends of Lude, perhaps it's more a case of choosing not to look too carefully. I just felt all the Ood are going to come back now. It was just a bit too...
Who's going to let them?
a bit too easy. And also, if they've had a lobotomy, if they've had part of their brain cut out, will
they want to?
Yeah, I mean, it seems it doesn't seem to be very clear, because at the end it seems like even the process dude have been restored to freedom, but that doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense if they've actually been lobotomised.
I think, wasn't it the only reason that the lobotomisation worked was that the big brain was kept under electricity, and therefore once the big brain was freed or the electricity taken down a little, they started to become more like the unprocessed ood, and really the translation sphere was less about getting rid of their brain and more about them being able to communicate with humans.
Yeah.
There's quite a few plot holes in the nature of those brains.
Well, a more fundamental thing, not just with respect to plot, but it's obvious as the poetic justice in the programme, you know, the bad guys, obvious bad guys get killed. But you then have the line from the doctor, well, Donna says to the doctor, "With you, I don't know what's right and wrong anymore." And the doctor replies, "It's better that way."
Oh, that seems ridiculous in context, because yes, the whole thing seems to be saying very clearly, slavery is wrong, and quite rightly too. And then to say, I'm not sure what's right and wrong. What? It's a bit like that bit in Revenge of the Sith, where they say only the Sith deal in absolutes, and it seems to be just a random bit of pop relativism thrown in for the sake of it, even though the series is based on the Doctor having very definite moral convictions and acting on them.
But the Sith are evil, Anakin. from my perspective, the Jedi are evil. Then you are truly lost. Yeah, it's nice that Obi-Wan remembered what he said earlier.
Very good. So, what's people's concluding thoughts then, Peter? After watching this
on a second watching, it's lost an awful lot of its luster. Again, visually, wonderfully put together. Nicely directed, some superb effects. Nice to have the Ood back, I must admit. But in terms of depth, it is distinctly lacking.
I think that I was still as pleased with it as I was the first time round. I think that I always felt that it was lacking in depth, and therefore I'm not too surprised to realise that it was. I think that, you know, it was very heavy-handed and pretty badly handled. But the other stuff kind of made up for it. It was quite exciting. It did have some nice bits. And as you said, it's got a lot of very good special effects work and location stuff. So.
Yeah, I think this episode gets credit for being the best depiction yet of an alien race and an alien world, because it might, implausibilities aside, it does show the Ood as a genuinely alien species, very different from us, and gives a good it's probably the best depiction yet of an alien world, and so for that I think it gets a lot of credit, and it's fun and it's exciting, and it's just a pity that it was rather let down by the one-dimensional characters and the lack of subtlety in handling its subject matter. On the whole, very good, but that does let it down.
Yeah, on the good side, I think has probably the best music so far of any of the new series ones, especially the the scene for the death of the Ood, with the strings and stuff and the singing part of that song was very good. Yeah, and some nice, well to put together action sequences, but I think, as everyone has agreed, there's a complete lack of depth at all, and it just eventually just seems to be a cut and paste job of action sequences, really. And yeah, it was just very, very unsubtle in the extreme. And I think with the concept of the story, you could do a lot more with it with not too much difficulty.
Yeah,
you wouldn't have to change it massively to make it much, much better. So again, I think in general, as I said before, on rewatching, I just think it gets worse.
You won't be investing in the DVD.
I don't think so.
Well, just briefly, how much depth do you think we can expect from Doctor Who as populist Saturday entertainment tea time with 10-year-olds as its primary audience?
I think you can expect more depth than simply slavery is bad, especially if they're going to make points like, where do you think your clothes come from? If they're going to do that, then at least deal with it. Don't just let it hang there. I just think it was a wasted opportunity if that was the kind of thing that they could have done. And I think that, you know, it's letting it off far too lightly to say it's aimed at kids, you know. Plenty of programmes are aimed at kids and can still manage an adult subtext.
I mean, simple things you could do with this. Firstly, is you could see you could cut to some other, even indoors, scenes of families of the Second Bountiful Empire with Uda servants being very good. And you can see the benefits, and you can understand, you know, or reference to before we have the Ood, things were like this, and things afterwards, you know, minute, that's it, at least, at the most, that's all you need to do. Yeah. And then you've got an idea why you can understand why they'd want the slaves.
Yeah.
If that's a simple thing to do.
Yeah. If you just had a simple villain justification speech where they got to state their case well before people had lewd, it was like this, but things are so much better now. Just to be able to see why, from their perspective, someone might buy into thinking that's acceptable. Just so we can see that, rather than, oh, they're evil, and that explains it, which is always a bit of a cop-out. And I think also, it's because we know what Doctor Who can do, we know that it can have a great deal of depth, and they have done some really good stories, things like human nature and stuff. And while you don't necessarily want something too heavy, and this was quite a dark episode, week in, week out, you can still have more depth on the regular basis.
That's true. I think this is part of the problem of particularly children's television in the current media culture, and family entertainment as well, as we've seen with Doctor Who. The idea that if a 10-year-old is going to watch it, it has to be aimed specifically at a 10-year-old's level and can't tackle anything that you think might be a bit more complicated. Part of the thing of growing up, especially when you're reading books or watching drama that is perhaps a little bit, maybe even too old for you, is the fact that you get the main thrust of the story, you pick up all the main points, you follow it, you enjoy it, and there are subtleties and things that you won't necessarily appreciate when you're 9, 10, 11 years old, but you can come back to a few years later and watch, and you may not even pick it up consciously when you're watching it at a particularly young age, but subconsciously, these things will be sinking in.
I mean, you think the revelation of the Daleks, I mean, it was clear you understand why they like Davros, because he fed people. Yes. The fact he was killing people to feed them is irrelevant, to some degree. You understood the motivations of why he was held in such great esteem.
Yes.
And therefore it made sense.
Yes, this is true.
As a story, and you can buy into that.
Mm. Yeah.
But
I think it's true, when it comes to something like Doctor Who, you don't want a 45-minute treatise on the philosophy of the slave trade.
No, that's why I'm not writing.
But I think you could easily have some more depth,
yeah,
a couple of extra strings to the bone, and not lose anything at all, and not lose any of the viewers.
Yeah. So I think we'll have to.
Yeah, I think that wraps it up for this week. Yes, thank you for listening. If you've got any comments or feedback, please comment on the blog, on the Facebook group, or indeed by emailing us at impossiblepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you very much.